Hi, I'm Josephine Ensign, author of Skid Road, On the Frontier of Health and Homelessness in an American City, and Way Home, Journeys Through Homelessness. For the past 40 years, I've worked as a nurse practitioner providing primary care to people experiencing poverty and homelessness. I have the lived experience of homelessness as a young adult. I live and work in Seattle, a city with our nation's third highest number of people experiencing homelessness. Only New York City and Los Angeles have higher numbers. The Skid Road podcast aims to amplify a diversity of voices about homelessness in the Seattle area. Beginning in 2015, when a state of emergency was declared for homelessness in our city and county, I've done a series of oral history interviews with local people living and working at the intersection of health and homelessness. Public health nurses, emergency department physicians, politicians, heads of nonprofit agencies, activists, and frontline staff. People who have not only endured homelessness, but who are now housed and are working on creative solutions to homelessness. I've learned a lot from my conversations with all of these people, and I want to share their insights with you. On a semi-weekly basis, I'll post a new podcast episode featuring these conversations, interspersed with some of my own reflections. Learn more about this project through my website at josephineensign.com. Please subscribe to this podcast and share it with others. Thanks for listening. So I'm here today on Tuesday, March 14th, 2017 at Jack Straw Studios, and I'm here with Charlotte Tucker Sanders, and I'm Josephine Ensign. And Charlotte, as you and I were talking earlier, this is oral history project for the Skid Road project that's really trying to kind of tease out some of the complexities of safety net healthcare in King County. So the first question I have for you is, what led you to the work that you do? And as part of that, obviously, talk a little bit about the work you do and also that you've done.
Mm-hmm. Well, currently, I'm a teaching associate at the School of Social Work here at the University of Washington. And what led me to this position now is it seemed like a good transition from working in the field of social work to spending more time and supporting those who are going to be continuing the work in social work. And so that was really appealing to me. And I'd also had an interest in working with students because I'd had students join us while I was working at Neighbor Care Health's youth clinic. And for me, that was a way not only to help support students in doing this work, but it was also a way to stay connected to what they were learning in school and to kind of keep up on a new practice and approach to doing this work. As far as what led me to do social work, that's a really good question. I think my experience with social work began as a child. My mom was very much involved in the community that I grew up in. She became a community worker with Department of Social and Health Services, and so she was greatly involved in the community and working with people, especially elders. And so I guess having that as my model, and that was just how we related to the world. We were involved. We were not only involved in community service, but also in just our community with families. It was a small community, small town, rural town.
So are you willing to say where it is?
Yeah.
It's a secret.
Well, it's interesting when I say where I'm from, people either look at me puzzled or they've actually heard of it because of they somehow connected to Toppenish, which is in the Yakima Valley here in Washington State. And it's part of the Yakima Nation Indian Reservation. And so for some people, they've heard of it because of their experience in doing healthcare. We have the Yakima Valley Farm Workers Clinic there. And so it tends to recruit quite a bit of students and interns and people really interested in serving underserved communities. And it's interesting, I didn't really recognize that I was from an underserved community until other people told me I was.
Telling you that. Yeah. That's interesting.
So I guess that's where my interest and passion for doing social work and community work really started. And as far as my work in supporting young people experiencing homelessness, that really started when I moved to the Seattle area. Prior to that, I'd been working with young people doing case management and therapy, actually working with Yakima Valley Farm Workers Medical Mental Health in the same community that I'd grown up in, I'd returned to after I finished my undergraduate degree. And I spent about a year there providing services and then moved to the Seattle area. And really finding, I tell students, you need to find your niche in doing this work, what really brings you fulfillment and kind of helps you to continue the work. It's not an easy field to be in or to sustain yourself in. And for me, when I moved to Seattle, one of the first positions I was able to find was as an on-call worker at a youth shelter. And that's where I discovered what this work really means to me and how useful I could be to young people and doing just a very simple thing of providing a safe place for them to be and how powerful that was.
Was that with youth care? Is that where you were?
No, it was actually, it was Denny Place Youth Shelter that was run through Catholic Community Services. And this was in 93 that I first started working there. And so that became kind of the catalyst just of becoming more and more involved, moving to a new, larger city and trying to find work and being new to the resources. Usually, and I tell students this, that the first positions that you might find may not be as elegant or romantically wonderful. But that you'll never know where they really lead, because that's kind of where I started, was doing overnights and then finding other work that was also in supporting and serving young people at the time met my financial needs, but it also met my needs for development in doing this work. I was able to pick up different jobs working with young people in different capacities. So working overnights at a shelter, doing youth work on a drop-in center. I worked with University District Youth Center. I think back when this was more of an independent program in the University District, I did on-call work on their drop-in floor. And I also worked in residential programs. So with youth care, joined their staff at some of their residential programs as another on-call worker. And after kind of doing odd jobs here and there, I eventually got a full-time position at the shelter that later led to me becoming a direct service supervisor there. So it's been an interesting first few years of developing my career, which I call now a career. At the time, it was, this is what I do. So,
and then you started. Were the clinic manager for the 45th Street.
Yeah. I spent about 10 years working at the Denny Place Youth Shelter, probably the last two of those 10, then transitioning to a case management position at the University District Youth Center, which was at that time had then joined under the umbrella of Catholic Community mm-hmm. Services. And so after about 10 years of direct service, a window in my life opened to applying for graduate school. And so I attended the University of Washington in their extended degree program while still working and got my master's and continued to do case management for a small amount of time before then joining Neighbor Care Health's youth clinic as their youth clinic manager and social worker. And that's really where another world of doing this work opened up, being able to work with young people in a healthcare setting and working on an integrative healthcare team was probably one of the best experiences I've had, and just opening me up to what else I could be doing to support young people. It incorporated a lot of the skills and knowledge I had from doing the work in the community, in addition to developing another skill and area of my own practice of providing care in a healthcare environment, and also being able to see young people in a different setting, I think is probably one of the benefits to doing a lot of different work within the community, is that you get to see different sides of people, and they become more multidimensional. Now you get to see them having different achievements than you would if you only worked with them in certain environments. Then they also get to know you. You're around a little bit more. And I think that helped to develop trust in seeing me in different places. I became more of a reliable person.
Nice.
So, yeah.
And so what have been some of the biggest joys, or is there a story, you know, obviously protecting identities of people, yeah. but anything that's a real memorable story that is kind of a joy or a highlight for you?
Yeah, deciding on which one to, you know, I was interviewed recently by an undergraduate student. The task was to find a social worker to interview, and it's a very similar question was asked. And I think I reflect mostly on the young people that I was able to carry a working relationship with in the different settings that I was working in. And so, for example, in doing case management at a drop-in center, multi-service center, with a young person, and then later on being able to see them continue a really positive relationship with them as they were to become patients at the clinic years later. And I think for me that was, one, I could see that they were still here, and I could see that they were still working on their goals and whatever else they were trying to accomplish, getting housing, finding stability. And so generally speaking, that's been my joy, is to be able to see people continue and thrive. I mentioned during that other interview, there was a young person that I had met while working at the clinic, and she'd been a patient of ours for a few years, and even well after the time that she was no longer a patient, she continued her connection with the clinic, whether that be to stop by and say hello, or whether that be to introduce someone she knew to the clinic so that they could get their healthcare needs met. But one of the highlights, and I'm going to try not to cry this time, as I did in the other interview.
Some tissues if you need them.
It just proved the point that we all need some place to belong. And sometimes those places aren't our natural supports. Sometimes we have to create those places for ourselves, and sometimes as service providers we have to help to create those places for others. And so So this young woman, after no longer being a patient, she still continued contact. She'd stop by and give us an update as to how she was doing. And one of the latest updates that she'd given was that she had received training to become a healthcare provider herself in dentistry. And the next time that she came, and she'd always fill us in and, yeah, this is where I'm staying, or this is what's going on now, or this is what I'm learning. I can't wait to come back here. Is there any way I can volunteer, or can I work here someday? One of the last visits that I received when I was still working at Neighbor Care's youth clinic, she brought a young man with her, and she couldn't wait to come and introduce him and to also let us know that she was getting married and she's going to have a baby. Mm. And I think it was at that moment. You always develop relationships with people that you work with, and some closer than others, and you always want to give them a place to return to, or to say that that was a relationship that really helped, or this is where I found a new part of myself. And at that point, it really became clear to me that we as service providers sometimes don't expect to be, but sometimes we are placed in positions to fill that need of where a young person might go to in sharing great news. It's mm-hmm. not always this the really hard stuff, the negative stuff that we are privy to as a provider, but that we also get this wonderful news, these experiences, and they have no one else to take them to. You know, if I were in that young woman's position, I would have been going to my mom. I would have been going to my family or those people who I trusted and loved to share that moment with me and the excitement. And for her, that was that moment. Mm-hmm. She was so excited to come in and let us know what was going on. And
because she didn't have that relationship with her family.
Yeah, and
supports.
She didn't. That was something that was missing, and that somehow the relationships that she'd built with us and the providers, she just came back and needed to let us know. And she was really excited to introduce her fiancé to me at the front desk, and then introducing him to other people. And he was able to kind of be received in that same way as she felt.
Nice.
Yeah.
So kind of on the flip side of it, what have been some of the major frustrations for you in the work? What would you say, kind of looking back on it?
I think there are different levels of frustration. I think there will always be a frustration in the systems that are meant to support young people, that are meant to give them safety, provide them with safety, provide them with security, and that it doesn't always happen for them within that system. Then there's the level of disappointment, or I guess feeling discouraged when you have a young person die, when you have a young person not yet finding their way out of a cycle. It's discouraging when you see them feeling hopeless or helpless about their own situation. So I think those are probably the things that stand out to me now, and just reflecting back. And I guess that's where hopefully service providers can be a part of that recovery and healing. Another side of the work that I've been doing after receiving my master's is, you know, in thinking about the systemic frustrations. That was partly why I pursued work within Children's Administration. Initially thinking I would be going to work for the department as a social worker, trying to see if I can make change in that capacity. Currently, I'm working at their central intake unit as an intermittent social worker. So I screen calls of abuse and neglect. And for me, that's a way to address some of my own frustrations with the system. I feel like my position there allows for a different perspective on the needs of adolescents and how they are just as at risk as any other young person being abused or neglected. And just because they are a little older doesn't necessarily mean that they should be expected to have certain survival skills. So that's another way that I've addressed my own frustration with systems.
Is it kind of do that front level work?
Yeah. You know, again, being a social worker, you almost always have to have two jobs. For me, I think it became something of my own practice where I need to do something else, kind of diversify my experiences so that I can be reminded that there's more than one way of doing something. And so having this, the side work has given me, it's helped me to continue to have more than one perspective in doing the work. I'm part of a system that's meant to support young people, and I want to do my best when there is a call to be able to ask the right questions and to provide support not only to the young person that the call is being made on behalf of, but also to the person making the call. A lot of times it's from a family member or from someone who could really benefit from other resources after the call. So that's something else that I've been doing on the side.
Nice. So when you say that you almost have to have two jobs, I mm-hmm. was interpreting that as the low pay for social workers, but then also you're saying that it helps to give a bigger picture yeah. of things. Is that correct?
Yes. I think definitely in working with students, I let them know you're not always going to find your dream job immediately, or you may not recognize that it's your dream job. But there is a significant difference in the amount of pay, say, for instance, someone graduating with a master's in social work compared to a master's in business.
Oh, yeah.
I would think that the same is for nursing and for other healthcare providers, especially when they first start out. I think the other part of it, I mean, I'm good at reframing. And so for me to reframe it as it allows me to develop a different perspective. It also helps me in understanding a system where many of the young people that we've served come from.
Nice. So that kind of relates to another question that I have for you, especially like passing on to, you know, the future generation of healthcare providers or whomever. But what have you done to take care of yourself in terms of helping to prevent professional and personal burnout? The reframing,
obviously.
Yeah.
I think it's the practice of, I try to reflect on my experiences so that I'm not just left with the feeling.
And how do you do that? Do you write or you talk or you just think?
I talk. Or? I think since, you know, in this work, you develop relationships with other people who have done similar work. And it's been such a blessing to have those friends to talk to when you really are experiencing difficult situations or just questioning, what am I doing here? Am I doing what I need to be doing? Not just in providing care, but even just questioning, is this still the right work for me? And so that's, I think, been really helpful. I have done some writing. I think I go in cycles of when I'm feeling like I can write about almost anything, and then there are other times where writing just doesn't seem to satisfy, and that's when I need to talk to somebody. I think also, you know, reflection or doing more introspection is to trying to understand life in general and how this makes sense in this world. And not that I can make sense, but just asking and finding connections as to what meaning does this have?
So kind of the bigger existential kinds of things.
Exactly, exactly. You know, I think everyone does what they do in this world or in this life for a reason. And I think reminding myself of why I've been doing this work and the importance of it, and not only me serving others, but how is it serving me? You know, what am I getting from it? For me, I try not to do any work where I can't have any fun. The work is difficult. It can be draining emotionally and sometimes even physically. But I really try hard to have fun wherever I'm working, whatever I'm doing. I try to remember to play, especially with young people. And I think that's probably what's made me want to continue in serving young people specifically, is that I definitely feed off their energy. I am inspired by them, and I think that's probably what's contributed to my existence so far in doing this work. I see a lot of people transitioning out of this work. You don't find many people, and looking back, how many people can I really say are still doing this work since 93 that I first met when I first started? And there aren't many.
So they're just doing something totally different?
Totally different.
Not even social work.
Found something else to do. You know, you mentioned burnout, and that's pretty typical, I think, of most people I've worked with. One of my friends that I had done case management with reached a point of capacity that, and especially, you know, after within your own life, you have experiences that at some point make it very difficult to do this in your professional life. Whether that be you have children of your own and it becomes way too personal, way too real. Then there are others who reach a point of compassion fatigue and really can no longer process the secondary trauma that occurs. That's almost inevitable when you do this work and you hear stories and you hold people's stories. So I guess for me that it's been helpful to find others who I can talk with that have an understanding, that don't ask those questions that interfere with me being able to just say this is what happened. So I guess it takes someone who's kind of done this work, but I don't have to explain the background of it. It's just this is what's going on, and they understand.
Which has always impressed me about social work is in terms of the supervision of having that, of having like a more experienced or, you know, senior person that you regularly meet with.
Exactly.
And, yeah, which I haven't seen in any of the other health professions. And it just seems like it is a really good idea for this kind of like frontline, really difficult work.
Yeah. I think I can't agree with you more. I think that's probably what's been the most beneficial to me, is having supervision, having those who will call you on anything that peaks up, if they can recognize when I might be going through some countertransference and when I might be crossing my boundary and maybe needing to be reminded of what those boundaries are. Someone who can help to figure out really complicated situations or issues with young people, especially if, you know, there's mental illness involved, and what is the best practice associated with those concerns. It's really helpful. And you don't feel quite so alone in doing the work.
Right.
Yeah. I'm not sure why other professions don't require that. I think it's, you know, maybe not a requirement, but if they could show that it would be best practice for the provider, you know, in helping them to do this work.
Right. So what are your kind of hopes and dreams for kind of safety net healthcare in our city and even in our country?
Oh, my gosh. You know, I think, you know, with regard to healthcare, my hope and dream would be that everyone would have their needs met and it wouldn't be associated with their socioeconomic stance or their any other identifying information related to their identity, if that makes sense. I would hope that there would be much more equity with healthcare and also other basic needs. You know, I feel like if we were to really think about, you know, this world seems to be driven by money and the costs and benefits. And if we were to really look at our system and not have it be based on that, they might actually recognize that if we keep people healthy in the long run, we wouldn't be spending as much money on other issues related to unhealthy people. If we were to feed people, if we were to give people their basic needs, if we made sure that everyone had enough to live on, we probably wouldn't be so consumed with issues of violence, issues of homelessness, related to homelessness. So I guess that would be my dream, is that we would eventually recognize that meeting human needs, basic needs, would be good for everyone.
Nice. And is there anything that I haven't asked you that you'd want to include in this?
Wow. I think, you know, just thinking about, like, who's going to be listening to this someday? Who's going to be wanting to learn more about this moment or this work as it looked like now? I guess I would encourage them. You know, if things are looking better, then I would ask them to look back on now and hopefully see that we did something that helped promote that. If things are looking worse from now, I would hope that they would look back and see what did work and how they might be able to continue that. I think in looking at all of the ups and downs of resources, you know, once something has been shown to work and to help to promote health and healing, that doesn't ensure that it's still here tomorrow. Now, so whoever might be listening, hopefully they would see that there were a lot of people doing great work and there's so much that still needs to be done. And I would encourage anyone to go into social work. Because I don't regret going into social work at all. It's been wonderful. It's probably been the most usable degree. It's like I've been able to use my skills and my knowledge and everywhere I've gone, even beyond social services. So I would encourage them to think about social work.
Nice. But to not take whatever we have for granted, that we have to keep trying to work for what we know kind of works for people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, there are so many programs out there and practices that just fizzle because of lack of funding, mm-hmm. because of I think we're so interested in what's new, what's trendy, what's the new practice, and we forget about what really does work. No, we forget that creating natural supports for people helps to not build a reliance on services. How do we build those natural supports? Maybe we should help to maintain families, and we should help to support parents in doing their parenting. So I guess looking at it as a, so many things that do help that don't necessarily get funded.
That aren't sexy.
That aren't research-based.
Right.
Exactly. You know, we spend a lot on doing research, but there's a lot of practice out there that hasn't been researched and developed the reputation of being successful that get lost.
Right. Nice. Well, I want to thank you for taking time today to do this interview and for being your amazing self. So thank you.
Thank you, Josephine.